Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Catfish Charlie by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Brian Telestai. Chapter 1. May 2, 1891. Bushwhack, Wilbur Ames, deputy town marshal of Wolfwater in West Texas, looked up from the report he'd been scribbling, sounding out the words semi-aloud as he'd written them, and pressing his tongue down hard against his bottom lip in concentration. He knew his letters and numbers well enough, but that didn't mean he had an easy time stringing them together. He almost welcomed the sudden, uneasy feeling climbing his spine, stealthy as a brown recluse spider. He frowned at the brick wall before him. Below the flour-sack-curtained window, the drawn curtains still bearing the words, Pioneer Flour Mills, San Antonio, Texas, though the Texas sun angling through the window every day had badly faded them. The sound came again. Distant hoof thuds. A horse's whicker. Silence. A bridle chain rattled. Bushwhack, a big, broad-shouldered, raw-boned man and former bushwhacker from Missouri's backwoods, rose from his chair. The creaky Windsor was mostly Marshal Abel Wilkes's chair, but Bushwhack got to sit in it when he was on duty, usually night duty, as he was on tonight. And the marshal was off, home in bed, sleeping within only a few feet of the marshal's pretty schoolteacher daughter, Miss Bethany. Bushwhack shook his head as though to rid it of thoughts of the pretty girl. Thinking about her always made his cheeks warm and his throat grow tight. Prettiest girl in Wolfwater, for sure. If only he could work up the courage to ask the marshal if he could... Stop thinking about that, you damn fool! Bushwhack castigated himself. The marshal's holding off on letting any man step out with his daughter until the right one came along. And that, sure as holy blazes, wasn't going to be the big, awkward, bearded, former defender of the old Stars and Bars, as well as a horsebreaker, until a wild stallion had broken him, his left hip, at least. No, Miss Bethany Wilkes wasn't for him, Bushwhack thought, half pouting as he grabbed his old Remington and cartridge belt off the wall peg right of the door, the uneasy feeling staying with him even beneath his forbidden thoughts of the marshal's daughter. He glanced at his lone prisoner in the second of the four cells lined up along the office's back wall. Skinny Thorson was sound asleep on his cot, legs crossed at the ankles, funnel-brimmed, weather-beaten hat pulled down over his eyes. Skinny was the leader of a local outlaw gang, though he didn't look like much. Just a kid on the downhill side of 20, but not by much. Skinny wore his clothes next to rags. His boots were so worn that Bushwhack could see his socks through the soles. The deputy chuffed his distaste as he encircled his waist with the belt and soft leather holster from which his old, walnut-gripped Remington jutted, its butt scratched from all the times it had been used to pulverize coffee beans around remote Texas campfires during the years, a good dozen. Bushwhack had punched cattle around the Red River country and into the Panhandle, when he hadn't been fighting Injuns or blue bellies and minding his topknot, of course. You always had to mind your scalp in Comanche country. Or breaking broncs for Johnny Sturges, until that one particularly nasty blue roan had bucked him off onto the point of his left hip, then rolled on him and gave him a stomp to punctuate the ride and to settle finally the argument over who was boss. That had ended Bushwhack's punching and breaking days. Fortunately, Abel Wilkes had needed a deputy and hadn't minded over much that Bushwhack had lost the giddy-up in his step. Bushwhack was still sturdy, albeit with a bit of a paunch these days, and he was right handy with a hide-wrapped bung starter, a sawed-off 12-gauge, and his old Remington. Now he grabbed the battered Stetson off the peg to the right of the one his gun had been hanging from, set it on his head, slid the Remington from its holster, and, holding the long-barreled popper straight down against his right leg, opened the door and poked his head out, taking a cautious look around. As he did, he felt his heart quicken. He wasn't sure why, but he was nervous. He worried the old Remy's hammer with his right thumb, ready to draw it back to full cock if needed. Not seeing anything amiss out front of the marshal's office and the jailhouse, he glanced over his shoulder at Skinny Thorson once more. The outlaw was still sawing logs beneath his hat. Bushwack swung his scowling gaze back to the street and stepped out onto the jailhouse's rickety front stoop to take a better look around. The night was dark, the sky sprinkled with clear, pointed stars. Around Bushwack, Wolfwater slouched, quiet and dark in these early morning hours. 1:30, if the marshal's banjo clock on the wall over the large, framed map of western Texas could be trusted. The clock seemed to lose about 3 minutes every week, so Bushwack, or Wilkes, or Maggie Cruz, who cleaned the place once a week, had to consult their pocket watches and turn it ahead. Bushwack trailed his gaze around the broad, pale street to his left. It was abutted on both sides by mud-brick, Spanish-style adobe, or wood-frame, false-fronted business buildings, all slouching with age and the relentless Texas heat and hot, dry wind. He continued shuttling his scrutinizing gaze along the broad street to his right, another block of which remained before the soda-stippled, bone-dry, cactus-carpeted desert continued unabated, dang near all the way to the Rawhide Buttes and Wichita Falls beyond. The relatively recently laid railroad tracks of the Brazos, San Antonio, and Rio Grande line ran right through the middle of the main drag, gleaming faintly now in the starlight. Most businessmen and cattlemen in the area had welcomed the railroad for connecting San Antonio in the southeast with El Paso in the northwest and parts beyond. Celebrated by some, maligned by others, including Marshal Abel Wilkes. The San Antonio and Rio Grande line might have brought so-called progress and a means for local cattlemen to ship their beef on the hoof out from Wolfwater, but it had also brought trouble in the forms of men and even some women. Oh, its share of troublesome women as well, don't kid yourself. In all shapes, sizes, colors, and creeds. However, it being a weeknight, the town was dark and quiet. On weekends, several saloons, hurdy-gurdies, and gambling parlors remained open as long as they had customers, or until Marshal Wilkes, backed by Bushwack himself, tired of breaking up fights and even some shootouts right out on the main drag, Wolfwater Street. Marshal and deputy would shut them down and would send the cowboys, vaqueros, sodbusters, and prospectors back to their ranches, haciendas, soddies, and diggings, respectively. The road ranches stippling the desert outside of Abel Wilkes's jurisdiction stayed open all night, however. There was nothing Wilkes and Bushwack could do about them. What perditions they were, too. When he'd heard all the trouble that took place out there, Bushwack was secretly glad his and the marshal's jurisdiction stopped just outside of Wolfwater. Too many lawmen, deputy U.S. marshals, deputy sheriffs from the county seat over in Heraklion, and even some Texas Rangers and Pinkertons had ridden into such places, between town and the Rawhide Buttes to the west, or between town and the Stalwart Mountains to the south, never to be seen or heard from again. In fact, only last year, Sheriff Ed Wilcox from Heraklion had sent two deputies out to the road ranch on Jawbone Creek. Only part of them had returned home, their heads in gunny sacks tied to their saddle horns. As far as Bushwack knew, no one had ever learned what had become of the rest of their bodies. He didn't care to know, and he had a suspicion that Sheriff Ed Wilcox didn't either. The road ranch on Jawbone Creek continued to this day, unmolested, at least by the law. That was the joke going around. Bushwack shoved his hat down on his forehead to scratch the back of his head with his left index finger. All was quiet, save the snores sounding from Skinny Thorson's cell in the office behind him. No sign of anyone out and about. Not even a cat. Not even a coyote, in from the desert, hunting cats. So, who, or what, had made the sounds Bushwack had heard just a minute ago? He yawned. He was tired. Trouble in town had kept him from getting his nap earlier. His beauty sleep, the marshal liked to joke. Maybe he'd nodded off without realizing it and had only dreamt of the hoof thud and the bridle chain rattle. Bushwack yawned again, turned, stepped back inside the office, and closed the door. Just then, he realized that the snores had stopped. He swung his head around to see Skinny Thorson lying as before, only he'd poked his hat brim up on his forehead and was gazing at Bushwack, grinning, blue eyes twinkling.
"What's the matter, Bushwack?" the kid said. "Am I nervous, are we?"
Bushwack sauntered across the office and stood at the door of Skinny's cell, scowling beneath the brim of his own Stetson. He poked the Remington's barrel through the bars and said,
"Shut up, you little rat-faced tinhorn, or I'll pulverize your head."
Skinny turned his head to one side, and a jeeringly warning light came to his eyes.
"My big brother, Frank, wouldn't like that, now would he?"
"No, the hangman wouldn't like it neither. He gets $20 for every neck he stretches. He's probably halfway between Heraklion and here, and he wouldn't like it if he got here and didn't have a job to do, money to make."
Bushwack grinned.
"Of course, he'd likely get one of Miss Claire's girls to soothe his disappointment. And every man around knows how good Miss Claire's girls are at soothing disappointments."
It was true. Miss Julia Claire's sporting parlor was one of the best around. Some said the best hurdy-gurdy house between El Paso and San Antonio, along the San Antonio and Rio Grande line. And Miss Julia Claire herself was quite the lady. A fella could listen to her speak English in that beguiling British accent of hers all day long. All night long, for that matter. Only Miss Claire herself didn't work the line. That fact, her chasteness and accent and the obscurity of her past, which she'd remained tight-lipped about for all the 5 years she'd lived and worked here in Wolfwater, gave her an alluring air of mystery. Skinny Thorson now pressed his face up close to the bars, squeezing a bar to either side of his face in his hands until his knuckles turned white and said,
"The Reaper ain't gonna have no job to do once he gets here, because by the time he gets here, I won't be here anymore. You got it, Bushwack?"
The Reaper was what everyone around called the executioner from the county seat, Lorenzo Snow. The prisoner widened his eyes and slackened his lower jaws and made a hideous face of mockery, sticking his long tongue out at Bushwack. Bushwack was about to grab that tongue with his fingers and pull it through the bars, pull it all the way out of the kid's mouth, by God, but stopped when he heard something out in the street again.
"What was that?"
asked Skinny with mock trepidation, cocking an ear to listen.
"Think that was Frank, Bushwack?"
He grinned sidelong through the bars once more.
"You know what? I think it was."
Outside, a horse whinnied shrilly. Outside, men spoke, but it was too soft for Bushwack to make out what they were saying. The hooves of several horses thudded, and then the thuds dwindled away to silence. Bushwack turned to face the door, scowling angrily.
"What in holy blazes is going on out there?"
"It's Frank, Bushwack. My big brother, Frank, is here, just like I knew he would be. He got the word I sent him."
Skinny tipped his head back and whooped loudly. Squeezing the cell bars, he yelled,
"I'm here, Frank! Come and fetch me out of here, big brother!"
Bushwack had holstered the Remington, but he had not snapped the keeper thong home over the hammer. He grabbed his sawed-off 12-gauge off a peg in the wall to his left and looped the lanyard over his head and right shoulder. He broke open the gun to make sure it was loaded, then snapped it closed and whipped around to Skinny and said tightly, "One more peep out of you, you little scoundrel, and I'll blast you all over the wall behind you. If Frank came to fetch you, he best have brought a bucket and a mop." Skinny narrowed his eyes in warning and returned in his own tight voice. "Frank won't like it, Bushwhack. You know Frank. Everybody around the whole county knows Frank. You and they know how Frank can be when he's riled." Bushwhack strode quickly up to the cell, clicking the 12-gauge hammers back to full cock. "Mute on here too good, Skinny. Liable to get you killed. Best dig the dirt out in your ears." Skinny looked down at the heavy, cocked hammers of the savage-looking gut shredder. He took two halting steps back away from the cell door, raising his hands, palms out, in supplication.
All right now, Bushwhack," he trilled. "Calm down. Just funnin' yous all."
He smiled suddenly, with mock equanimity.
"Probably not Frank out there at all. Nah, probably just some 30-a-month and found cow nurses looking for some coffin varnish to cut the day's dust with. Yeah, that's probably who it is."
His smile turned wolfish. Grimacing, anger burning through him, Bushwhack swung around to the door, holding the 12-gauge straight out from his right side. Right index finger curled over both eyelash triggers. He pulled the door open wide. His big frame filled the doorway as he stared out into the night. Again, the dark street was empty.
"All right, who's there?"
he said, trying to ignore the insistent beating of his heart against his breastbone. Silence, save for crickets and the distant cry of a wildcat on the hunt in the desert in the direction of the stalwarts. He called again, louder.
"Who's there?"
A pause.
"That you, Frank?"
Bushwhack and Marshall Wilkes had known there was the possibility that Skinny's older brother, Frank, might journey to Wolfwater to bust his brother out. But they'd heard Frank had been last seen up in the Indian Nations, and they didn't think that even if Frank got word that Wilkes and Bushwhack had jailed his younger brother for killing a half-breed whore in one of the lesser parlor houses in Wolfwater, he'd make it here before the hangman would. There were a total of 6 houses of ill repute in Wolfwater, not bad for a population of 6,500. Though that didn't include all of the cowboys, vaqueros, miners, and sodbusters who frequented the town nearly every night and on weekends, and the most unseemly visitors, including gamblers, confidence men, and women, which the railroad brought to town. It was in one of these lesser houses, only identified as Girls by the big gaudy sign over its front door, that Skinny had gone loco on Busthead and thrown the girl out a second-story window. The girl, a half-Comanche known as Raven, had lived a few days before succumbing to her injuries caused when she'd landed on a hitch rack, which had busted all her ribs and cracked her spine. Infection had been the final cause of death, as reported by the lone local medico, Doc Overholser. Anger at being toyed with was growing in Bushwhack. Fear, too, he had to admit. He stepped out onto the stoop, swinging his gaze from right to left and back again, and yelled,
"Who's out there? If it's you, Frank, show yourself now."
Bushwhack heard the sudden thud of hoofs to his right and his left. Riders were moving up around him now, booting their horses ahead at slow, casual walks, coming out from around the 2 front corners of the jailhouse, flanking him on his right and left. They were ominous silhouettes in the starlight. As Bushwhack turned to his left, where three riders were just then swinging their horses around the right front corner of the jailhouse stoop and into the street in front of it, a gun flashed. At the same time the gun's loud bark slammed against Bushwack's ears, the bullet plundered his left leg, just above the knee. The bullet burned like a branding iron laid against his flesh. Bushwack yelped and shuffled to his right, clutching the bloody wound in misery. He released the 12-gauge to hang free against his belly and struck the porch floor in a grunting, agonized heap. He cursed through gritted teeth, feeling warm blood ooze out of his leg from beneath his fingers. As he did, slow hoof clomps sounded ahead of him. He peered up to see a tall, rangy man in a black vest, black hat, and black denim trousers ride out of the street's darkness on a tall gray horse and into the light from the window and the open door behind Bushwack. The guttering lamplight shone in cold gray eyes above a long, slender nose and thick blonde mustache. The lips beneath the mustache quirked a wry grin as Frank Thorson said,
"Hello there, Bushwack. Been a while? You miss me?"
The smile grew, but the gray eyes remained flat and hard and filled with malicious portent. Chapter 2. Marshal Abel Wilkes snapped his eyes open, instantly awake.
"Oh, for Pete's sake!"
Almost as quickly, though not as quickly as it used to be, the Colt hanging from the bedpost to his right was in his hand. Aiming the barrel up at the ceiling, Abel clicked the hammer back and lay his head back against his pillow, listening. What he'd heard before, he heard again. A man outside breathing hard, running in a shambling fashion. The sounds were growing louder as Wilkes, 56 years old, bald but with a strap of steel-gray hair running in a band around his large head above his ears and with a poorly trimmed soup-strainer gray mustache, lay there listening. What in blazes? Abel tossed his covers back and dropped his pajama-clad legs over the side of the bed. He'd grabbed his ratty old plaid robe off a wall peg and shrugged into it, and was sliding his feet into his wool-lined slippers, as ratty as the robe, when his daughter's voice rose from the lower story.
"Dad? Dad? You'd better come down here."
She stopped abruptly when Abel heard muffled thuds on the floor of the porch beneath his room, here in the second story of the house he owned, and in which he lived with his daughter, Bethany. The muffled thuds were followed by a loud hammering on the house's front door.
"Marshal Wilkes!" a man yelled.
More thundering knocks, then Bushwack Ames' plaintive wail.
"Marshal Wilkes!"
"What in tarnation is going on now?"
Wilkes wondered. Probably had to do with the railroad. That damned railroad. Bringing vermin of every stripe into.
"Dad! Do you hear that?"
Beth's voice came again from the first story.
"Coming, honey,"
Abel said, as he opened his bedroom door and strode quickly into the hall, a little breathless and dizzy from rising so fast. He wasn't as young as he used to be, and he had to admit his gut wasn't as flat as it used to be either. Too many roast beef platters at Grace Hastings Cafe for noon lunch, followed up by steak and potatoes cooked by Beth for supper. Holding the Colt down low against his right leg, Abel hurried as quickly as he could without stumbling down the stairs, just as Beth opened the front door at the bottom of the stairs and slightly right, in the parlor part of the house. The willowy brunette was as pretty as her mother had been, but she was on the borderline of being considered an old maid, since she was not yet married at 24. The young woman gasped and stepped back quickly as a big man tumbled inside the Wilkes parlor, striking the floor with a loud bang. Not normally a screaming girl, Beth stepped back quickly, shrieked, and closed her hands over her mouth as she stared down in horror at her father's deputy, who lay just inside the front door, gasping like a landed fish. Abel knew it was Bushwhack Ames because he'd recognized his deputy's voice. The face of the man, however, only vaguely resembled Bushwhack.
He'd been beaten, bad, mouth smashed, both eyes swelling. Various sundry scrapes and bruises further disfiguring the big man's face.
He wore only long handles, and the top hung from his nearly bare shoulders in tattered rags.
"Oh, my God!"
Beth exclaimed, turning to her father as Abel brushed past her. Like Abel, she was clad in a robe and slippers. Lamps burned in the parlor as well as in the kitchen, indicating she'd been up late grading papers again, or preparing lessons for tomorrow.
"Good God!"
Abel said, dropping to a knee beside his bloody deputy, who lay clutching his left leg with both hands and groaning loudly against the pain that must be hammering all through him.
"What the hell happened, Bushwhack? Who did this to you?"
He couldn't imagine the tenacity it had taken for Bushwhack, in his condition, to have made it here from the jailhouse, a good 4-block trek, blood pouring out of him. The man already had a bum hip to boot.
"Marshal,"
Ames grated out, spitting blood from his lips. Abel turned to his daughter, who stood crouched forward over Ames, looking horrified.
"Beth, heat some water and fetch some cloths, will you?"
As Beth wheeled and hurried across the parlor and into the kitchen, Abel placed a placating hand on his deputy's right shoulder.
"Easy, Bushwhack, easy. I'll fetch the sawbones in a minute. What happened? Who did this to you?"
Ames shifted his gaze from his bloody leg to the marshal.
Thorson. Frank Thorson. And his men. Shot me. Beat me. Stripped me. Left me in the street. Laughing at me."
The deputy sucked a sharp breath through gritted teeth and added,
"They busted Skinny out of jail."
"Are they still in town?"
"They broke into one of the saloons, the Wolfwater Inn. Still there, far as I know. Oh, Lordy."
Bushwhack reached up and wrapped both of his own bloody hands around one of Abel's.
"They're killers, Marshal. Don't go after 'em alone."
He wagged his head and showed his teeth between stretched back lips.
"Or you'll..."
He was weakening fast, eyelids growing heavy, barely able to get the words out.
"You'll end up like me. Dead."
With that, Bushwhack's hands fell away from Abel's. His head fell back against the floor with a loud thump. He rolled onto his back, and his head sort of wobbled back and forth, until it and the rest of the man's big body fell still. The eyes slightly crossed and halfway closed as they stared up at Abel Wilkes, glassy with death. Footsteps sounded behind Abel, and he turned to see Beth striding through the parlor behind him.
"I have water heating, Pa. Juana should fetch the doc."
She stopped suddenly as she gazed down at Bushwhack. Again, she raised her hands to her mouth, her brown eyes widening in shock.
"No need for the doc, honey,"
Abel said, slowly straightening, gazing down at his deputy. Anger burned in him.
"I reckon he's done for. Bushwhack is."
Beth moved slowly forward, dropped to her knees, gently set her hand on the deputy's head, smoothing his thick, curly, salt-and-pepper hair back from his forehead.
"I'm so sorry, Bushwhack,"
she said in a voice hushed with sorrow.
"Stay with him. Take care of him as best you can, honey,"
Abel said, reaching down to squeeze his daughter's shoulder comfortingly.
"On my way into town, I'll send for the undertaker."
Beth looked up at her father, tears of sorrow and anger in her eyes.
"Who did this to Bushwhack, Pa?"
"Frank Thorson."
Beth sort of winced and grimaced at the same time, Most people did that when they heard the name.
Oh.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?